This is Fam Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Mal Yamir Logan. How you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, let everybody know we are a featured podcast on the Newsly platform. You can see scrolling below that coupon code for Ghost. You can check that out. That's an audio-only platform. We're a featured podcast. We'll be on there tonight with the audio version of this podcast on Newsly, so you can check that out with coupon code Ghost. Other than that, we also have your LinkedIn, which is the LinkedIn within, it has in, and then Mal Yamir R. Logan. And you don't have to worry about remembering that because you can just click through on all the platforms that we're on. So everybody will be able to connect with you there. But again, thank you for being on the show. And as the first set of questions I always ask everybody, like, what motivates you and why do you do what you do?
What motivates me fundamentally is that I care a lot about people. I care a lot about people. I'm someone who's always, you know, when I was growing up, sometimes people told me that, oh, you really need thicker skin. You know, you're so sensitive. But the reality is that I deeply care about people. Every person has a full story, and you know, everyone has been through life. Life just has a way of happening. And especially for those of us who find ourselves othered in some way. For example, I'm an ambiguously racialized woman with multiple neurodivergence. And by the way, one of my neurodivergences is Tourette. So you might see me blinking my eyes a lot. That's just the Tourette. I also have autism. And I've also in the past few months been dealing with a new disability, with a medical situation. And so going through life with those kinds of intersecting identities has meant that I have run up against a number of obstacles. I've also had a number of advantages, but the reality is that it kind of magnified how much attention I paid to, I wonder where someone else's pain points are, and just really empathizing with what people are going through, having been through things myself and having, you know, had a rough start to life as well. And so it really made me empathetic to really caring about people and wanting to make a difference.
It's very important to kind of key on those things, because a lot of times everybody wants overall society, there's this tendency to try to cookie cutter cloning, you know, everybody's in the box, and you get, you know, within, you know, the microcosm and the macrocosm. I'm into sociology. That's one of my majors. But the idea is, you know, you tend to have these social mores that are set. And if you're kind of outside that, and if you're in, you know, a group, like you said, like I'm in a minority group. I'm a diabetic. I'm a cancer survivor. There's certain things that put me into certain categories. And, you know, when you're in that other category, sometimes you have to be aware, and also you have empathy for people who might be in similar situations. And there is a tendency in our society, a lot of bullying for people to just be conform or like suck it up or just forget about it. It doesn't matter. And I think there needs to be more sensitivity to what you're talking about.
Well, I do think the reality is that we are surrounded by systems, which is good. We need systems. We can't have chaos, but the existence of the systems in society and the structures that we have, it means that a lot of the time people may not even intend to exclude others. But sometimes it just happens. We can't grow up in society without having internalized some of that systemic stuff ourselves. You're exactly right. Right. That kind of sense of conformity can play really strongly. And it does take time to start to question within ourselves, how much of that have I actually absorbed?
Yeah, there's a lot of absorption. Like even then within minority groups, you have people doing destructive behaviors, like colorism within the Black community.
Yes.
You know, there's a whole thing going on. You know, the good hair, the bad hair, like are you certain shade is more advantageous than another shade? And you're like, you could go to an all black college, a traditional black college, and you could find a lot of destructive behaviors that have been adopted since, like, you know, post, you know, emancipation. And he was like, I would think that you would be more enlightened, right? And then people are falling into these patterns. It's like, why? Well, there's a lot of power to that structure, and it's still affecting people even now.
Precisely. Those systems persist, and they affect everyone, regardless of identity, regardless of what group someone is a part of, whether it is a true minority or the global majority or whatever kind of levels of power people may perceive themselves as having.
So, like, when you're trying to, like, navigate this, you know, when you start to get awareness, because sometimes people want to push things down that hurt them. Like, if it hurts, then I'm not going to dive into it. Yes. I'm not going to be like I always talk about poets, because I love poets, in the looking glass. Like, the looking glass, if you're a creative person, is like that self-realization that you're going to actually look into, like, your inner demons or anything that's affecting you, and maybe go forward with a vulnerability that you don't see as a hindrance, but it's a strength, right? You can actually learn from it and dive into it and accept it and then move forward rather than being, like, stuck in a loop.
Yes. It's interesting that you say that. One of my practices is reflection. Every day is spending some time in reflection. Sometimes it's more than others, and it doesn't even need to be a big thing. I don't need to get out all the meditation cushions and light some candles. I don't even need to do that. All it needs to be is even just a couple minutes of sitting and being with yourself and thinking and noticing within ourselves. Carl Jung talked about the shadow, and it's the idea. So exactly as you said, those parts of ourselves that we often try to repress or push down or ignore or avoid because it's uncomfortable. But those are all parts of ourselves, and why not just sit with that? And often those parts of ourselves are not actually as scary as we think they may be. They are probably just trying to protect us from something.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because I deal with a lot of, you know, creative people, and their first tendency is to try to clone whatever is popular. And I always tend to say, why don't you show me the thing that you're most scared to show anybody? Mm. Right? Because that's going to really show me as a producer, I'm going to see your authentic self. And that's the thing that you're kind of not confident about, but that's the thing that makes you uniquely you. You know, there's so many, there's a Beyonce that's out there. There's a Taylor Swift that's already out there. So if you go and try to just clone that, well, you know, they're already there. So what's going to really work is who you are, is not anybody else. So that's going to show something that if we dive into that and make that the best that you can be, you try to make that sound really unique and this have very good quality, then you can be secure in your own authentic nature. Which a lot of people are scared of that. And I think that applies to, like, anything you do. It doesn't have to be just a musician or a writer or a theater person, even an athlete, anybody doing anything. If they start thinking about how can I express my real self?
Absolutely. And it gets me more happy. Absolutely. It's that actually reminds me a lot of my leadership journey, the discussion of authenticity, because, you know, and I think what I've learned about authenticity and, you know, finding that sound that's just you or whatever it is that aligns with your values and what you care about, what your interests are, what you're passionate about. The one thing I've learned is to, and I'm not sure how it applies actually in the creative field, but I know from a leadership perspective that can mean really stepping into your own sense of agency, your own sense of decision-making, your own sense of power. I think sometimes we restrict ourselves. We think, oh, well, I don't really have any power, or, well, I can't really release that, or I can't really make that product. I mean, you know, what happens if no one buys it? What happens if no one likes it? What happens if? But we always have we usually have a little more say than we think that we do. We usually have a little more space, a little more flexibility, a little more room to grow and push ourselves. And how can we step into that to be the truest, most authentic version of ourselves? Sometimes it might mean that we need to shift. Maybe we need to shift something. It's okay to shift. It's okay to change your mind. It's okay to try things and try again and keep building on what you're doing. That's okay. But at least give it a shot, right? Give it a shot and fill out more of that space.
I'm a big purveyor of the happy accident, which is the happy accident is kind of like you might have a plan. In the middle of your plan, something unexpected happens. Instead of trying to stamp it out or hide it, you embrace it and you go with it. And like, you know, and I have a lot of hats, but I'm in like software design. And we could have a goal and we have a project plan. But then in the middle of it, like a scientific experiment, we find out, oh, this does this. And we didn't even know it could do that, but that's actually better than what we're working on. To have the courage to bring that to leadership and say, this actually is going to add more value. So we should really work on this. Where you could have the other mindset was like, well, that's not what we're supposed to work on. So just push it away. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunities in life that are similar to that situation I just mentioned.
They are. And I like that concept, the happy accident. That's going to stick with me. I like that.
It happens in music all the time. Like you could have something written on the bars and you could go to start and like, this is how I arranged it. And then somebody, drummer does something unexpected or singer says something different than what was planned. And there's a different tone, there's a different key change. They say, you know, that's actually better than what we wrote. And you got to have the kind of guts to say, even though you arranged it, what's happening right now in the present time is better than what you arranged.
Yes.
So do you have like the ability to shift that in real time and deal with like the flow state, which tends to be very powerful. It's kind of like what the poets talk about, the muse, and we can channel it. As you get older as a creative person, you start to realize if you get in touch with that muse, things aren't as hard as they seem. Things tend to start to happen because you have to trust that you have like a capability. You have some innate expertise. And if you don't doubt that, you're just channeling and trusting yourself.
And that's exactly why I think it's so important for people to really learn how to listen to themselves, really learn how to listen. And this comes back a bit to the reflection piece. There's so much noise out there. We live in a world that's filled with noise, and that's okay. That's just how it is. But are we ignoring our own wisdom, right? We know. And there's always that part of ourselves in the back of our mind. You know, our minds are super processors. They are. They're powerful than all the fancy AI that exists today. They're very, very powerful. And we're usually picking up. There's so much information out there and within ourselves. And we're picking up on things all the time. And we really need to learn how to pay attention to that. And to do that, we need to learn how to listen to ourselves and not immediately just swat away, you know, oh, well, that can't work because, or, oh, whatever, or just completely avoiding listening to ourselves. So we really need to learn to listen to ourselves and to then start trusting ourselves. And that is a journey.
Yeah, because a lot of times, like if you think about the bell curve and the outer limits of like, you know, a lot of times the creativity is on the outer side, outer limits of that. You know, what happens is, if you think about like Einstein wasn't being, if you measured him, you graded him, he was getting like D's in algebra and calculus, but like where his head is. There's, sometimes our measurement systems aren't correct. Sometimes the metric isn't correct. Another example is like, if you get a million views with a cat video with the same song everybody's using, you got a million views, right? And this other guy gets 30 views. He might give up, but guess what? Somebody that saw that 30 views gave this guy an opportunity and he suddenly got into a big project and made a bunch of money. So the quality of the quantity isn't always the measure, but a lot of our society say, oh, it's only good if you get the million views and 1,000 likes. it doesn't think about like law of attraction, who you are actually reached, who you could reach. And sometimes even if it's not a lot of people, you might reach that key person that actually saw that, saw what you were doing and understood it. And then suddenly you start to pull together in a community and things happen.
Absolutely. It reminds me a lot of something I talk about a lot and that I think about a lot, particularly as someone with leadership responsibility and someone who teaches leadership, is the idea of stewardship. You know, we tend to think of stewardship, like taking care of resources. We tend to think about it with the environment, but I actually think about, am I being a good steward of whatever opportunities that I have right now? Like, am I being wise with it? Am I being smart with it? And, you know, the person who only gets the 30 views, okay, maybe right now you're only getting 30 views, but how are you positioning yourself? Like, is how you're positioning yourself and how you're talking about yourself and how you're presenting all of your creative work, is that aligned with what truly matters to you? Because, you know, or are you just trying to make the cat videos just because you want it to go viral, right? Because whatever success you achieve, you're going to have to sustain it, right? Success doesn't just come and just hang out for no reason. It's something that needs to be sustained. And how are you defining success? And what does that look like? And so if whatever you're creating, if you do want it to do well, and it does end up doing well, you're going to hope that you actually created something and presented yourself in a way that is sustainable for you, that you can keep doing for a long time. Because once you've built up this, this body of work or this persona, well, you're going to have to keep doing it for a while, because if you've built that up and that's now what people expect, and you need to think about what kind of momentum have you built. So make sure it's actually you, make sure it's aligned with what you care about, because you'll be spending a lot of time doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old story of, like, you think about the one-hit wonder. Mm-hmm. The one-hit wonder hits that one song, and then their whole career, they're, like, tied to that one song. And if it really isn't who they are, imagine that. You got a whole career built on something you don't even like.
Yes.
Right? And then you have to present it, because that's the only way you can actually, you know, have a career.
Yeah.
And so people, you know, it kind of simplified, but it's the same thing you just said is, you know, we have artists, they get stuck in that. They get stuck in that, like, they're one trick pony. Like, that's it.
Right.
That's the only thing the audience likes is that one song. That's it. They don't like your rest of your catalog. And you have to market everything for that. And exactly. Then you're like, wow, like, is that really what it is?
Is that really what it comes down to? Well, like,
do you want to go do something else?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's what it is. But yeah. One of the things that I wanted to shift a little bit is, like, in resilience and how you talked about, like, it can be a myth.
Yes.
And talked about it in that kind of mindset, because it's like kind of counterintuitive. But like maybe we can dive into that related to what we've been talking about.
Absolutely. What I've noticed is that, you know, resilience is a term that it's used a lot. And the thing is that resilience originally came about as a term that related to medical stuff, health stuff. And over time, the use of that word changed to talk about the environment. And then it started to be about people. And how well do you bounce back from tough times? And the thing that I have concern about is that I think that we all receive a lot of messages these days about, you know, you just need to take better care of yourself. And, you know, why are you so burnt out? You know, you just need to take more bubble baths and drink some tea and meditate every day. And, you know, you need to, you know, have some more grit and just, you know, keep punching above your weight and just keep going. And increasingly, companies are actually spending billions and billions of dollars across the world on resilience programming and wellness programming, because workers are burning out. Like the statistics are quite significant. Yeah, I think it's something like 43% of workers, I think, in the US are burned out, and it's somewhat similar in Canada, and it's even worse for women. And, you know, burnout, it's not just about, you know, gee, this is really hard and this sucks. It's actually, you know, it becomes unremitting stress that results in chronic and mental health conditions. Like it's not good, right? So
yeah, it's bad. It's a problem.
Yeah. And we can't compartmentalize parts of our bodies. We have one body, and you know, we can only take so much. And so in the face of that, companies are trying to invest in wellness programs and resilience training. But my concern with it is that it's like it's being applied as a band-aid to a gaping wound.
Well, it's not a right? holistic solution. It's like,
yeah,
kind of like the band-aid, you know, pill solution.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big problem because, like, in our industry, like, yeah.
Sorry. Oh, well, sorry.
What I was going to say is, like,
I think there was a bit of a delay.
In our industry, sometimes it's measured like our programmers, if they stay on something like 12 hours straight, they stay in their cube. Well, you know, you get carpal tunnel, mm-hmm. you get diabetes, you get high blood pressure, yep. and then you physically burn out, right? You have mental burnout, but you have physical burn, like it's strokes, people with diabetic yep. comas, people, all kinds of problems.
Yep.
You know, physically they have to go out for surgeries and go out for medical procedures because they just are unrelenting and not understand, like, you need to have spiritual, mental, physical kind of yes. pillar breaks.
Yes.
And it's like the band-aid break, you know, the coffee, the adrenaline, the whatever you're doing is like, that's not really doing it, right? The pill isn't really doing it. You need the kind of a holistic vision. It's like, maybe, like you said, the noise. Sometimes you have to get out of the noise. Sometimes you have to go away from a problem rather than doubling down on just getting stressed mm-hmm. out about being in the problem. Then give it a different set of eyes and like let it go. And people have a hard time letting go.
It's true. It's true. And, you know, in any of the teams I've led, and, you know, the environments I've worked in have been very demanding. And yet I've always been very clear with people, you know, please don't push yourself. Like, don't work tons and tons of extra hours trying to get things done, because the problem is I'm never just thinking about today. As a leader, I'm never just thinking about today. Yes, we have deliverables, but you know what? I have to think about the rest of the week and next week and the rest of the month and the rest of the year. And if people all burn themselves out, that, you know, if you go just, you know, nonstop 12, 14, 16 hours a day, every single day, you're going to get diminishing returns. You are not going to be thinking as clearly. You will not be able to think creatively. You will not be coming up with the new ideas. And the quality of your work is going to go down. And that's bad for all of us. But, you know, coming back to the resilience piece for a minute, it really concerns me that the way that resilience is being applied to people, because the way that it's being used is, it's almost making it sound like it's a character flaw. Like, you're just not resilient enough. It's your fault. Like, it's your fault that you're burnt out. And that really concerns me, because I actually don't think it is. I think it's actually a systemic issue. And so, you know, I think that the words that we use matter. And I think that we need to think more critically about, okay, so if I am burnt out, what are my real options? And let's practice some radical acceptance about what I need to do. Because, you know, from a perspective of a worker and the perspective of a leader, we really need to start thinking more sustainably. Like, how do we keep going when things are hectic, but how do we maintain the quality?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times it's, when I've been in toxic workplaces, we have this kind of top down.
Yes.
I do as I say, not as I do.
Yes.
Structure. And then it's like, you know, it's very you know, it's not, people just dread being in the meeting. They yes. dread being in the queue. They dread yeah. that person coming to talk to them. Well, how are you going to get a level 110% performance when you have dread is like a power move. It's like, well, that if you get people that respect and enjoy, it's like when I had a teacher that didn't red mark my paper and got me into poetry. So every day I wanted to be in that class and learn yes. about William Blake. Every day I wanted to dive into Tennyson and Lord Byron. I just got so into it. And it's like, why would I get into it coming where I came from? But they made it so appealing and they made it so inviting. And even if you made a mistake, they didn't hit you so hard that you didn't want to put your hand back yes. up. If you have somebody that makes you want to be there, that want to contribute, yes. and not every leader operates that way. They operate in a more, you know, oppressive way.
It is. And it is actually oppressive. In one of my roles, I'm an adjunct professor at a university, and one of the courses that I teach is on leadership practice. And we do a whole session on anti-oppressive leadership. And because people-centered leadership is so important. And what does that mean? That means that as a leader, I put people first. That's what it means. I put people first. Because, like, let's think about that for a minute. If as a leader, you put people first, it means that no matter what someone's situation is, you're there with them. It's you're there with them. It's not power over. You know, I like to think of it this way. I see my job as a leader is like I'm part of a tree canopy. So I'm this tree and I'm creating a psychologically safe, healthy environment for the plants and the animals and the insects and the flora and the fauna underneath so that they have a safe environment and they can do their thing and they can be whatever kind of plant or flower animal they are. And that's what I see leadership as. But sometimes that can be a challenge though, because ideally you're a leader who's on a leadership team where everyone is helping to create the canopy and you're all creating a canopy together. And so, you know, you're bringing up all these healthy environments underneath you and you can support each other. But sometimes it can be more isolating to be that kind of leader. I think things are changing slowly in that regard, but I think there is a change that is starting to come through on that. But it's so important. It's so important. We spend so much of our time at work. And actually, I think I'm trying to remember where I saw this stat somewhere in the research that your work and how you feel during your work day affects you 2.5 times. So if you worked, let's say, an 8-hour day, it's going to affect you more than double that time. No. Right? That's so work has a disproportionate effect on you and your quality of life. And as a leader, I may be just one person, but I have a disproportionate effect on the people on my teams. And this comes back to the stewardship. This is why you have to be a good steward.
Yeah, it's very important, because a lot of times I think if you have this kind of mindset in the leadership, like you, just everybody's like a widget and you can just replace them and there's no value and you don't encourage, like if you have a meeting and you're talking for a 30-minute meeting, you talk for 18 minutes as the leader and you don't give any time for any of your team to talk. Well, what are you going to get out of that? Right. Yeah. Say you got a team of 20 people and you just spent the majority of the time doing a top-down talk. What are you going to get out of that? You know, it's just obvious. Like if I'm a band leader and I'm dictating to the whole band, 4-member band, all the notes they're going to play. And I'm saying that's what it's got to be. And there's no discussion that you just have to do it that way. Versus a 4-member band saying, well, why not the drummer change the part? You know, bass player change the part, vocalist change the lyrics. Let's see what happens. They're going to probably want to show up to the recording session versus dreading it and wanting to get on the next flight out of the studio.
Absolutely. And, you know, if the band member or the leader in the meeting comes in and spends all that time talking and no one else gets to talk, well, you only got the benefit of one person's brain. What about everybody else? Everyone else has ideas and everybody else has so much to contribute and to get out of it, right? It's creating that kind of safe environment where people really feel valued and they can collaborate together and they actually enjoy doing the work and they come through on the work because they want to, not because they have to. That's quality leadership.
Yes, that's why I always, I really love it. I'm a consultant. When I'm in an environment and I feel it's very dynamic and it kind of feels like that band, I always kind of compare things to my artistic world.
Yes.
So if I get into that feel and it feels like that free flow fusion jam session, if it feels like that, then I said, well, this is good. This is a good workplace because it feels like I'm writing a song. So like, then I kind of judge it as, okay, now I know I'm in the right place. But if, like, I feel like it's like, oh, I'm being dictated to, like it's Beethoven's fifth and that's all it's going to be. I can't change it. Then I'm like, okay, well, that's already been done. It's already written, so why would I want to do that?
Yes. For sure. And the quality, the quality that they're going to get out of it, I think, you make an important point because that is something that I've noticed is that sometimes people think, oh, well, that's just a soft touch, right? It's just fluffy. It doesn't matter. You can, you can do the people thing if you want, but doesn't really matter, except it does. I mean, beyond the fact that first and foremost, it's just ethical. It is ethical to treat people as people. They are people before they are employees. Before they are anything else in the world, they are their own person with a full life and a full life worth of stories. And that matters. So first of all, it's ethical. And secondly, it creates a more pleasant working environment where people actually enjoy working together and enjoy the work they do, and it's more fulfilling. And thirdly, you actually get the highest quality deliverables when people are in an environment like that. To me, it's always been something that's been really obvious that how you lead a team matters just as much as the what it is that you're doing. Because, if people care, then they'll be, and they know that they're respected and valued and invested in as people, they will do their very best work. You will get the best, highest quality deliverables and it'll be efficient. And then, to your point, on those days when something goes awry, something goes weird, well, guess what? People are going to come through because they want to.
Yeah, it's like when you get in this environment where you're just another widget or everybody's replaceable and nobody's like, if you think about like an artisan that is hand building something, and I've got some, gear that's like hand built, and the hand built gear versus the mass produced gear, I really love because it has quirks. It's like different. It's like every version of it is different, right? And that enables me to do things because it has a unique quality to it. And that's the human factor. But we live in a world where like, oh, there's robotics, there's AI that can just, we're going to get really high quality repetition of the same thing. But what you lose is the human factor of the experimentation and the happy accident that comes from a human being there. And I think they're missing the boat sometimes and thinking that we're going to replace all these people. And maybe you will, but you're going to get something that eventually you're going to get replaced because it's just a sameness to it. It's just a widget. It's not a passion thing. Humans like to get passionate about the things they get. Yes. And if it feels, even if it becomes too reliable and too matter of fact, and they might not like it. They might think it's like, well, it's not that great. So go to the next thing.
Yes. And something you said made me think of this metaphor that my spouse asked a former boss of his years ago, which was, are we the fuel or are we the engine? Are you investing in us and taking care of us like we're an engine, and you're not just going to run through an engine? You need the engine in the car to make the car work. So make sure you're taking care of the engine. Or are we just, you know, the gas that you're just going to, you know, burn through and then replace? And that was something that really stuck with me. And as a leader, I have always believed that, and made an effort to make my intent clear that I see people as the engine. I really do see you as, you know, a beautiful and whole person. And you've been through stuff just like I've been through stuff. And we're all here together. So let's make this the best experience, most rewarding experience we can together.
Yeah, it's important to know people's, you know, the diversity of a human being, right? And so we go into neurodivergence and people having, you know, what some people might think is, well, that's going to affect productivity. But what they're not considering is a lot of creative people are neurodivergent. Yep. You know, I've met tons of artists that very creative people, like, and they have neurodivergences. My daughter is neurodivergent and she's a great graphic artist. And she's got, you know, it's kind of like the heart of her muse is like, it allows her to see things and do things in a way other people don't see it. And so she can, once you understood it, she just owns it. And then she's able to do things. Now she's like an art director for, you know, disabled artists, and she's providing all these services and having the empathy to work, you know, to understand herself, and then she could understand other people. Is if you don't have the management that understands that's an asset.
Yes.
And I think it's a liability. Then you have, I think you have trouble.
And I think that comes back to your earlier comments about the expectations for conformity and, you know, fall in line, which is, you know, if everyone's expected to conform and just to fall into line and to just all be exactly like each other, it's the same concept of the one person talking and not giving anyone else the opportunity. You're losing out on the full range of experiences and ways of thinking. One of, you know, when I was a late diagnosed actually for both the Tourette and the autism. The Tourette diagnosis was a couple of decades ago, but by then I was already a young adult. The autism diagnosis was quite recent, and it was so illuminating because what I learned is that the way that my brain is working is that it doesn't have this thing called a gating mechanism. So that means that when I'm, say, looking at let's say I'm at the music store and I'm standing in front of the section that starts with M, I'm looking at every single album in the M section. And I can't help that. My brain is seeing all, I'm taking in all of the information. Whereas for a neurotypical brain, the brain has gotten used to kind of quieting out things that it doesn't perceive as important or relevant in that moment, right? So that, you know, that person may only be seeing 10% of the albums. And the way that then that can translate to a workplace is, well, it means that a lot of neurodivergent people are systems thinkers. And I'm definitely a systems thinker, right? Yeah. Zooming out, looking at the big picture, seeing how it all fits together, zooming back in and understanding how all the smaller details interact with one another and affect each other. And that can be a challenge in the workplace. You would think that that would be an advantage because it means that we tend to be very strategic thinkers, but sometimes it can be a challenge because people who don't think that way may sometimes perceive neurodivergent people as, say, being negative, because we may raise, hey, has anyone thought about this possibility? And maybe we should be prepared for that, or, you know, maybe here's a solution. Maybe we should give this a shot before we move forward. But sometimes that can actually be perceived as negativity. And it's simply because neurodivergent people are seeing all the albums. We're seeing all the things, all the information. And that's why it is actually so valuable to have different perspectives and life experiences in the workplace.
You're definitely, if you're, you know, you're in engineering or design, it's good to have people who can see that, because a lot of things get missed, because like the regular a person who doesn't have that capability, they potentially don't see that flaw, or they don't see the option. Like, they might think there's only two options and there's five. They might not see the detail that actually could cause a big problem. They just think it's fine. And so what we find is, like, the people are very detail oriented and also can kind of do the context diagram and see all the actors and see where all the use cases are and see the connections. Where you get one person makes a change and they don't think about the cascading effect of that change. They just think in a narrow lane that only affects this. Well, a lot of times what we build a lot of systems, like, it's very interconnected. One thing you change could tie to 50 other things. And if you don't really think about the consequences upstream, downstream, like, you could cause a big problem. And society's like that. Oh, that's technical. No, that's like life. People make changes without thinking it through and don't understand the full consequences. And this happens in politics and civics and everything.
Microcosm.
And so people who aren't thinking at that level, if they get into certain positions, they can cause a lot of damage.
Yes, absolutely. It is so true. It is so true. And it's, you know, so I used to describe to people, because I do a lot of things. I've had to slow down most of the things that I do, given my medical situation that I've been dealing with. But historically, I've always been someone who's been doing a million things, and people have always remarked on, how do you get so much done? Part of it is that, well, I do work faster. Like, the way that because of the way my neurodivergence works, I do work very rapidly. But that's not the only part. The real thing is that I am always thinking ahead as if the future is the present. Because the fact is, we're actually all sitting in our future right now, right? Right now is the future from the present that we had last week or last month or last year. So right now is the future. And I contributed to this current place that I'm in. We don't always have full control, of course, you know, life circumstances happen, but, you know, thinking about what comes ahead, thinking of consequences, thinking through, being realistic about what it takes to get something done, to achieve something, that is a really useful skill to develop.
Yeah, I think it's important to be able to have inclusion for all these different, you know, types of people. But we've been kind of told there's a certain type of person that's preferred, and that's always frustrating. what I find is, like I've been, you know, what I talk about is this idea of expansion, which means like in music means like multiple genres. Mm-hmm. So I call my sound expansive sound. So I like jazz, punk, rock, soul, everything, and I'll mix them together. And people say, well, how are you going to market that? Because they want you to stay in a lane. And I'm like, well, I don't know how you're going to market that, but that's what it is. So an idea of like a polymath, or like what people would probably call a Renaissance person. Like, if you think about the person that can do art, science, you know, theater, like, you know, everything. They can kind of be like everywhere. Is that your concept of polymath, or maybe you can talk about what your definition is?
So what you just described, what you do with music, that is a great metaphor to how I go about life and career and creativity and really the main pillars of life. And the reason that I call myself a polymath is that I can never just do one thing. I've never been able to just do one thing. My interests are so varied and I can go deep on all of them. You know, I mean, even my career is a good example as a snapshot, you know, because I, when I'm not dealing with a major medical crisis, I'm in a leadership role, leading teams, and the types of work that we lead are extremely varied. Even the work that I was doing wasn't in one lane. You know, my primary team did work that, you know, five different kinds of major streams of work that are not usually all together. And then I am also, as I mentioned, I teach at a university. I teach two courses there. And I also have a small business where I turned a passion, an area of passion, tarot cards, into a small business. I'm an indie tarot deck creator. I'm a Reiki master. I'm also a writer. I love to write, and I'm trying to lean a bit more into that because, you know, that's another creative thing I love to do. I love making art. I enjoy music. I'm curious. I'm so curious about people and about everything. I think science is fascinating, and you know, and I'm a reader and all of these things. And, you know, you can drop me into most conversations and I can just as easily, you know, we can just as easily have a conversation about, you know, recent scientific discoveries as we could about what's going on in the tech industry, as what's going on, you know, in the public sector, you know, that's really what I mean. And for, you know, you talk about, well, people then try to ask, well, how do you put that into a box? This is actually something I struggled with for a long time in my career. And because I had done so many different things that the subject matters that I have dealt with, it's a really broad encyclopedia of different types of subject matter that I've worked in. And I've always been able to figure it out. But it's left a lot of people with, well, I don't understand what your thing is then, because you're expected to have a thing.
Yeah,
thing. And so, right, a thing. And for a while, I tried to describe it as interdisciplinary, but I'm like, that's not quite it, though, because as much as, you know, you talk about the microcosm, macrocosm, sure, there's absolutely that aspect of the way that I think and the way that I approach, say, my spirituality and my spiritual practice and the way that I approach my physical health and well-being and my mental and emotional well-being and aspects of myself, I do approach, you know, my other careers in the same way. But a lot of people struggle with, I don't get it. How are you doing this? You know, how are you into tarot and, you know, spiritual stuff and also into this really hard nose, like, you know, being responsible for, you know, a $2 billion program. Like, I don't get it. And yeah. So polymath, yeah, right? Yeah, just, yeah, that's what, yeah, I go with to try to, you know what, you, that's, want a box? Here's your box. It's your multicolored.
And then they'll say, they still don't get it. Then you tell them that, then they're like, oh, I still don't get it. Cause like, they want you to like, well, like make, simplify that for me. I was like, well, it's not a simplification thing. But it's like, yeah, it is a kind of struggle, because I find like a lot of creative people, if you really dive in it, like I met, you know, singers that are painters that, you know, yeah, that play piano, that like science, that, you know,
yeah,
could be into all, you know, could like sports. It's like people are like all over the map and they want to get pinned down. He's like, you want to pin this guy, this person down and say, well, who they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a simplified thing. They want to just put the top five, top two, you know, elevator pitch. Like, what are you going to do? And to me, it's like, well, it's the moment. Like, if I get into a moment, like, I could go work in Tokyo because I want to work in Tokyo to do something that I did for like 2 years. And it's like, why would you do that? Why would you go that far? It's like, well, because I find it interesting to challenge, yeah, things. You know,
and so why not?
You know, but like, you get people that are so like, they just stayed in, you know, Sinbury, Connecticut for 30 years and they stayed in the same cube. And they're like, wow, well, how could you go? How could you go do that? It's like, well, because if you're that type of a creative person, you kind of, and David Bowie made the statement, I don't feel comfortable in my art if I'm not treading water a little bit. Like he felt like he had to go somewhere where each persona he created, he didn't really have a handle on it. And that made him feel like, okay, I'm making progress. So we go from one persona to the next. And it would be, you know, taking in skills that the other persona didn't have. Like he would work with Luther Vandross, so he had to learn to get into soul music. But when he was working with like Ziggy Stardust, that's like old rock. And then it would go into pop. He would go and take on like a Stevie Ray Vaughan, who's like one of the greatest guitar players ever. He would go bring people in that way above what he could do and still feel confident. And then they would think that he's not, you know, not, you know, being intimidated. But, you know, when he talked to him, he's like, yeah, well, I was a little intimidated. I was treading water. But I felt like, well, why not? Why not try to push myself?
And that is exactly where growth happens, right? So because, you know, for lots of people, maybe they are genuinely okay with where they are. And for the folks who want to, you know, work in the cube and they don't feel especially creative, although I think everyone does have creative ability. And let's be honest, we're all creating our lives. So we all have some creative ability. Yeah, every day. But
yeah, micro level. You're still doing it.
Exactly. Precisely. We are all creators. But that is exactly where growth happens, and it's possible for all of us. It's between, you know, I think of people who are learning yoga, right? Yoga instructors will often say, okay, take yourself to your edge where you think your edge is and just slightly beyond, but then don't go past that, right? Because there's a difference between pushing yourself so hard that you injure yourself, mm-hmm. but also getting used to pushing yourself into that slightly uncomfortable space, right? And we can do that in every area of our life, right? Not everyone wants to be an athlete. Not everyone, you know, wants to, you know, pursue the arts, or not everyone wants to pursue management. Whatever your thing is, we all have the ability to notice where do I have an opportunity to expand, right? That expansiveness you were talking about earlier. And how can I push myself just to that point where, okay, now it's starting to get a bit uncomfortable, but wow, I did it. Look what I did. And that's how we grow.
Yeah. I mean, you always have to push, you know, a little bit. You know, I see a lot of musicians, what we'll do is like switch instruments, you know, go to an instrument they really don't know to try to learn, bring something different to the song. Because sometimes like the song needs something different. And it's not always the expert that brings the difference. If you're a guitarist and you jump on the synth, you're going to bring a different view than the keyboard player. You're going to look at that keyboard totally different than the keyboard player does. And you come up with really unique things. A good example of that is Pete Townshend from The Who. He came up with, like, you know, famous like Bob O'Reilly and Teenage Wasteland. There's some songs is like he's known as a great synthesis, but he's a guitar player. And right. Like, why? Because he approached the synthesizer different than Keith Emerson or Rick Wakeman or anybody else. Because he said, well, why not do it that way? Why not play it in this way? So he didn't play it like a piano player would. He approached it like a guitar player. And you get people who do, like Hendrix is known for approaching the guitar kind of like John Coltrane from a saxophone point of view. When you kind of dive into the tech of it, and it was like, wow, because he kind of phrased it like a sax is why how he sounds so different than anybody else, because he kind of started to think in a different way.
Yes.
And when you have these people who jump on different things and go and bring that expertise to something that they're not really expert at, that's when you really get a lot of innovation.
Which brings us full circle to why wide workplaces of any industry really need to embrace true, meaningful diversity, right? because everyone brings that extra, that extra value. That's where the potential for innovation is. It needs to be from seeing something from a different perspective. If you keep thinking of the situation from the same perspective you've always had, you're going to continue to get the same outcomes. That's why that's another reason why I think the curiosity is so important, and learning to practice curiosity with ourselves and with others, because I think it opens the door to exactly that kind of thinking of, well, what happens if I pick up that guitar, or if I, you know, go over to that keyboard or that synth, even though that's not my main instrument. And it leaves, I think, room for magic.
Yeah, it's just like you start to think about like inverse things, like taking something and inverting it and turning it inside out. Like that's the kind of overall thing that can happen if you take like a master of one capability and then put them into another area. Yes. And a lot of times people are like, well, stay in your lane. It's like innovation doesn't happen by staying in the lane.
You're exactly right.
So you like cross it over the lanes is how you get, you know, the really innovative things that they happen in industry. And you know, when think about Apple, you know, IBM is like computers should be business machines. And then, Apple computers could be kind of art machines that have an art aesthetic. And then you said other people say, oh, yeah, maybe you can approach it that way. So you go and you create things. It's like it doesn't have to all just be from a bean counter actuary. Not that that's bad, but you're like, why not have things that, you know, like they think about a Ferrari versus a Toyota. There's a certain design and art to that. It's a car, but one of them is like a piece of art. And one of them is just something you use to go to the store.
Right. Yes. But, that reminds me of the idea of when you were talking about trying the new thing of what do you do with completely new information then, right? We're in an era of rapid change. I mean, the speed, the velocity at which things have changed, it's just gone exponential in the past, I'd say, 3 years in particular, but really 3 to 5 years, there has been so much change. It's just getting faster. And if we're not allowing ourselves that space to be a little curious and to expand and to learn from others, to learn from ourselves, to if we're not actually creating the space for innovation and meaningful belonging where people actually want to contribute to that innovation, boy, we're going to be in trouble because change is happening, whether we're prepared for it or not. And the best way to do that is to be able to meet it with exactly that kind of mindset.
Yeah. If you think about it, like a kind of level, like the Uber driver today driving a car, Uber driver in the future might be flying a drone from their house.
Yeah.
Or operating like a robot in an automated restaurant, being the human operator behind it. So for every job that goes away, there's like new jobs where like, oh, you learn how to use the AI tools to help people. So you come up with new ways to, you know, do it. Like we have tools in music. I can use AI to run my soundboard and give me all kinds of options I couldn't technically do as fast as the AI can do.
Sure.
Doesn't mean that I got rid of a position. It's actually something I couldn't do because it goes faster than what I can do. It can give me like 10 different mixes. One sounds like Fleetwood Mac, one sounds like Michael Jackson, one sounds like Prince.
Right.
And it went and set all the settings to be typical of that artist. That to me would take hours to try to get that. If you have a tool, it can do it faster. So there's things that like your progress, you can't be totally scared of it. A lot of people are scared of, you know, progress, but we've had progress from, you know, the microcomputer and the mainframe to, you know, what we got with blockchain and all the stuff going on now. It's always going to be progress. And so, you know, the horseshoe person that was putting horseshoes on the horse was ticked off at the Model T. But, you know, they still found, you know, they got to be an auto mechanic.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Innovation just, it creates new things that we just haven't even realized or thought of yet, right? before social media was a thing, the idea of being a social media influencer did not exist. And the ability for people to create, you know, photos or videos that they send to people didn't actually put, say, photographers or videographers out of work. Lots of said influencers invest in photographers and videographers to create the content that goes onto social media. And so, you know, industries, they change, they adapt. And you know, I think if we stay true to who we are as people and we approach the future in an ethical way, then I see a lot of room for optimism.
Yeah, there's a lot of room for optimism if you realize that you never stop learning. If you feel like you should be done at certain points, you might have some trouble. Because I think some people want to say, well, I'm done. I already have my degree. I'm done. I don't need to get the certificate. The kind of future that we're in right now kind of demands that we become, that we actually are kind of students until we're not here.
Yes.
Which is a different mind frame that, you know, this mindset is not what some people were taught. They were taught that, well, I get this and I'm done, you know, and like, maybe no, maybe not. I think it's a different era. And so continual learning, it's like, well, I'm always going to school. Well, it's kind of like life. Like you actually in life, you are always going to school. You just might not know that that's the case.
Well, I think sometimes some folks don't want to learn. You know, something that I think about a lot is, well, did, you know, for the last 5 years, did you just live the same year over and over five times, or did you live five different years? Because if, you know, the more that you practice the growth mindset, like you're saying, and the more that you are constantly learning, those are going to be five different years. You're going to be enriching your life so much and contributing to creating a world that is better than we have now.
Yeah, I think that's a positive mind for it. Instead of thinking the world's like Terminator 3, you think the world is like this is really, you know, it's a box of chocolates. There's a lot of open, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's like it doesn't have to be, you know, there are things that are scary out there, but you don't have to focus on it. You can try to think about the positive and how you can contribute to the positive. So I think this is the law of attraction. You know, I'm Buddhist, so I tend to think in those ways. I think you can go toward the noise and the discordance, or you can go toward the harmony.
I love
it's
that.
Kind of like, it's up, kind of up to your where you are. But if you can start to guide yourself to go away from the noise and the dissonance and the discordance and try to get into harmony, not that you're always going to be in harmony, because it's like that's an idealized kind of state, but sure, you can try to shoot for it.
And that's exactly, you know, it just feels full circle back to some of those in our conversation on the importance of reflection and learning to listen to yourself so that you can be in harmony with yourself. If you don't know how to listen to yourself, how are you going to be in harmony with yourself? You don't even know what you really think. You're not really paying attention. So pay attention, right? Start to notice and pick up on all the wisdom that you already have and get to really know yourself.
Yeah, I think that we've gotten to know you on this podcast for the hour where we talked to you. We're at the end now, but I want to let people know that they can click on your LinkedIn. That will be fully clickable to be able to get in contact with you. I'm assuming that's how everybody can reach you.
Yes, that's the best way. Yes.
And so, yeah, I do encourage that on all the platforms that we're on. We were just on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. We'll be on all the other podcast platforms where you can listen to or view a podcast by tomorrow. And I want to thank you again for being a guest on the Fam Electric Ghost podcast. It's been great.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
Thank you. Have a great night.